Some houses creak with age, others whisper with memories, but a few roar with something darker. In West Pittston, Pennsylvania, the Smurl family faced a relentless haunting called by many the state's Amityville Horror. Demons in the walls, shadows in the crawl spaces, and voices that could not be silenced. Tonight, we step inside the duplex of dread with researcher, author, and cultural commentator Maxim Furyk, drawing on decades of work in psychology, folklore, and America's paranormal underground. Maxim traces not only the Smurl nightmare, but the greater web of haunted history, from Hinsdale House to the damned Wells House, and the psychic soldiers of faith who confronted evil. This isn't just a ghost story. It's a legacy of terror that refuses to stay buried. We're covering that right here on your home for the very best in paranormal programming. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is my Paranormal 360. Joining me now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Maxim Furyk. Maxim, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here this evening.
Thanks.
I want to get started with this because I think it's an interesting timing. Obviously, the new Conjuring movie just came out, The Conjuring Last Rites. And right. This story is based on and around the Smurl haunting. And in the pantheon of paranormal legacy and haunted locations, there are a lot of places that get a lot of attention. The Smurl haunting, I don't think until now has really gotten the proper recognition for its place in kind of pop culture and paranormal lexicon. Why do you think it's been so far under the radar for so long?
I'm really not sure. I know that Amityville is the one that, you know, everybody talks about, because what a horrendous story. You know, a 23-year-old kid that takes a rifle and kills his mother, father, two sisters, two brothers. You know, so I talk about Amityville and Hinsdale and all the other haunted houses. But with the Smurl haunting, I'm not sure why it's under the radar, because in 1988, Bob Curran wrote a book called The Haunted, co-written by Jack and Janet Schmurl and also Ed and Lorraine Warren. And then there was a Fox TV made for TV movie. So a lot of people knew about that. The Haunted sold a lot of books. So I'm not exactly sure, but it's almost like my Shepton mythology. I mean, how many people have heard about Shepton, even though the Shepton rescue technique saved those people in Chile, the 33, you know, the copper mining disaster back in 2010. So again, you would think that maybe the Shepton mining disaster would be a household word, as with the Smurl haunting, but they're not. And I don't know, Dave, I just think that sometimes some things resonate and others don't, you know, with the public consciousness. But when you compare the Smurl
haunting, I get that. Yeah, I was going to say, though, the Smurl haunting, this has got such a weird, I mean, this thing is a haunting that was not just experienced by some crazy family that might have been hallucinating. They had neighbors and law enforcement and many people from many walks of life that saw this or witnessed this haunting taking place.
Right. And, you know, I sort of operate on the what I call the universal law of 90, like 30% are going to be true believers, 30% are going to think it's a hoax, and then 30% could care less. So, but there's a 30% that we're talking to. But I want to say this, if we're going to throw around numbers, or if I am, in my book, the Smurl haunting, I have a chapter called the 2%. And this was Father Amworth. He was the Vatican's exorcist.
Right.
And he said that when somebody appears to have be possessed with the demons, you have to determine, the church has to determine whether or not they're mentally ill, i.e. schizophrenic or Tourette's or bipolar or whatever, or if they're actually possessed or by a demon. And he says 2% of the people are. Those are the people he's interested in. Those are the people that he deals with. And my chapter is called The 2%. You know, the rest, you know, I mean, let the non-believers and the bluebirds go and talk about that. But there's 2% that is for real, that we really have to be concerned about.
Well, and in this case, the Smurl haunting definitely falls into that. It almost feels to me like it's more well, I feel it's more believable than the Amityville Horror. I don't doubt that something happened in Amityville. And I've been friends with Christopher Lutz for over a decade, the youngest son.
Yeah.
And having had a chance to speak with him, I believe something happened there. I believe there was something very supernatural and strange, but I also believe that it was based more around George and his actions than I do around, you know, just this tainted piece of land in Amityville.
Yeah.
But with the Smurl haunting, again, it kind of goes out beyond. You've got so many other eyewitnesses to an account like this, and, you know, it deeply impacted the entire area.
Yeah. The thing that separates the Smurl haunting from Amityville and Hinsdale and all the rest is a sexual component, and that is that Jack Smurl claimed that he was raped by a female demon, a succubus, mm-hmm. and Janet claimed that she was sexually assaulted. That typically doesn't happen with these haunted houses, but it did in the Smurl haunting. That makes them unique, and that is pretty much their uniqueness, their demonic claim to fame.
Obviously, this is coming out as the final Conjuring movie starring Ed and Lorraine Warren. We'll see if that's true. I mean, there always seems to be a callback when things are popular, and the Conjuring franchise has been extremely popular, and it's brought to light some of these stories. I know a lot of people are going to have seen the movie or will be going to see the movie here relatively soon. You stuck to the facts as they were reported. You stuck to what was going on at that time, at that place. Why did you decide this was the story that you wanted to look into next? Was it simply the timing of the movie and the story all coming together at once?
Well, you know what? It was almost like, and I know this sounds pretty weird and pretty contrived, but I felt that there was something that was channeled through me to write the book. I lived in Luzerne County. I'm right up the road or down the road from West Pittston. So I would go up there and check out the frenzy, you know, just to see what was happening. I didn't, interrupt, or bother the Smurl family. I just let them have their peace because they were under assault by demonic forces and also by the public and by the media. So mm-hmm. I let them have their space. But in 1988, Ed and Lorraine came to Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, and I got permission to interview them. I hung out on the streets of Jim Thorpe with Ed and Lorraine. It was a summer night. I mean, I'm taking pictures, and it was just an awesome time. And Dave, I kept in touch with him over the years. I would call Ed up and ask him again how he did battle with demonic, you know, with the demons and all that. And they were Catholics. They were Christians. And they believed that, even though the devil, the power of the devil is great, the power of Christ is greater.
I want to talk a little bit about your friendship and working relationship with the Warrens, obviously, when we come back from the break. Like to know a little bit about that, but then let's dive deep into the Smurl haunting. I know this hour is going to go fast, and we're lucky enough to have our guest here for both sides of the show. Paranormal Apocalypse, This Is How It Ends. That's what we're going to cover a little bit later on in the program. Right now, we're discussing the book, The Smurl Haunting, When Ed and Lorraine Came to Town. The book is out and available. You can find it now. As a matter of fact, we have a link for it on today's program guide, and make sure you go see The Conjuring Last Rites movie. It is out and in the theaters right now. You're not going to want to miss it. We will be back. We've got so much more to discuss. And let's, as I said, dive into a little bit of the background of Ed and Lorraine Warren and Maxim Furyk right after this. Welcome back to the program. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360, your home for all things strange and supernatural. Maxim Furyk, our guest. And the new Conjuring movie, The Conjuring Last Rites, is in the theaters. Maxim's brand new book has just been released and is out and available, called The Smurl Haunting, When Ed and Lorraine Came to Town. Talk to me a little bit about your meeting and communicating with Ed and Lorraine. Were they pretty approachable and easy to talk to and get access to at that time?
Absolutely. You know, they showed up at a little touristy town in the mountains of northeastern Pennsylvania called Jim Thorpe. And I found out that they were going to be there at the Victorian Theater. So I wrote a letter to the owner and asked for permission to interview them. And he gave it to me. So I showed up. They did two PowerPoint presentations in this really tiny little room. It was like it was like a dungeon. It was hot. I remember there was a fan there, and they were doing their old PowerPoint presentations about Amityville and the Perrone farmhouse and all the other ones that they did. And keep in mind that Ed and Lorraine were very successful. They were charging something like $5,000 per presentation. And again, I don't know what they got at Jim Thorpe, but they did over 700 presentations at colleges. So they were well known when the world was starting to find out about demonology, you know, in the movie The Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby and The Omen. I mean, it came rapidly, but there was a hunger from the public to find out more about this stuff. But Ed and Lorraine pretty much opened up the doors to demonology, much like Sybil Leek opened up the doors to witchcraft and the pagans and the Wiccans with her book. So it was interesting that they both were ambassadors for their genre. Some people believed Ed and Lorraine and were very supportive of them. A lot of people disliked Ed and Lorraine. They probably have more. There's more people disliking them and claiming that they're con artists and that they hid behind the tapestry of Catholicism and all this. There's a lot of boo birds, and I run into them all the time. But nonetheless, I considered them my friends. Mm-hmm. I would call them up, and Lorraine had chickens. She had roosters in her house, and you could hear the rooster. She was a pet lover, but I would just ask Ed, and someplace I have, Dave, I have my cassette recordings, but I remember I transcribed these, but they're in my house someplace. But he would talk to me about how he did battle with demonic forces. And what he would do is he would invoke the spirit of Jesus Christ, of Padre Pio, and of Saint Michael the Archangel to do battle. And so he, that's what he told me. That's what he did. And again, it was just like an amazing thing. And you either believe in the realm of demonology, you either believe that good and evil exist, that the devil exists, or you don't. Then if you don't, you probably think you may fall into the ranks of those people that feel that all of this stuff was just conjured up by the church and by parents to keep us in line. If you don't say your prayers, the devil's going to get you. If you don't go to church, something, you're going to burn in hell, whatever. So
right.
We're filled with plenty of that fear. But myself, I personally believe that there is a realm of evil that's out there and that demonic energies can infest people, places, or things. Places like the Schmurl House, things like Annabelle the doll. So I believe that that's how it mm-hmm. works. And this is based on everything that I've read, everything that I've heard, everything that I've, experienced, so I believe that's how it is.
I'd like your personal thoughts on Ed and Lorraine. Like you said, there were a lot of thoughts that maybe they were con artists, that they might have inflated their stories a little bit. I don't doubt that they leaned into some of the entertainment value because there is value in being scared. People love it. They love to go hear these things. They're hoping to see something or feel something that takes them out of the normal and makes them a little uncomfortable. That's why horror movies and roller coasters and thrill parks and haunted houses at October are always so wildly popular. Do you think that what they did, they believed in? Do you think that they ever lost their way because of the fame and popularity of who they became? What's your take on it?
Well, certainly when I met them in Jim Thorpe, they were like superstars. I mean, there was a lot of people that just wanted to shake their hand and say hello. So you could tell that they were in that realm and just like, glowing. But people appreciated them and appreciated their story, appreciated what they knew. And people were looking forward to hear about that. So I think that's part of it. But like Steven Tyler of Aerosmith said, fame is like 1,000 chickens pecking you at the same time. I mean, it's tough to deal with. And when you look at a lot of the rock stars that experience fame, you're also looking at rock stars that experienced drug addiction and possibly death. So fame is a difficult thing to deal with. It's a killer. A lot of us would want to be rich and famous, but man, buyer beware, because when, if we're rich and famous, like a Dave Schrader, I mean, God knows the the price we pay for that. Fame doesn't come by itself. So I think Ed and Lorraine, you know, I think that they were human. I think that they were strict Christians, Catholics, and they talked about that a lot. They believe that that only through a strong faith in God could you go and do battle with these demons. And the way it I understand it is that the power of Satan is tremendous, but the power of God is even greater. And this is what they tell me.
All right. And I like that. That was very politically correct answer, but also leaning into the fact that you understand there was probably some entertainment value that they brought to this.
As yeah, yeah.
That.
And I didn't mean to dance around that, but yeah, no. but there was. But there was also something else of a, you know, very nasty sexual nature that follows Ed. And I choose not to look at that. You know, I had a personal friend that got involved in some something. He got caught, and I try not to even focus on that. I mean, it happened, it's done with, but I sort of put it in a lockbox to the side. I don't even want to consider it. He's a friend, you know, I mean, I respect him, and this just is something that happened, you know. So the same thing with Ed, and I don't pursue that. But yeah, but he has some baggage that people keep on bringing up, but does not mean that what he did with demonology, you know, was wrong. I mean, it does not have any impact on that.
All right. We're going to take a break again here in just a few seconds. And I want to continue to cover the Smurl haunting when we come back, obviously, to discuss this, because here's a story again that really brewed to the top. And there was a lot going on at that time. And, you know, Maximum, obviously, you've got all these movies, as you brought up, The Exorcist, The Omen, The Amityville Horror. You've got all these things kind of lighting the consciousness of the world towards this darker element that may or may not exist out there, right? That is, we want to tell ourselves comfortably as we sit in our homes that, you know, it's just a movie, right? It's just a story made up to get into our heads to frighten us as children. But there's something that goes beyond that when multiple people from multiple walks of life, including law enforcement, begin having these encounters at a haunted mm-hmm. location. We have to give up the concept that this is simply a hallucination, or my favorite, the mass hallucination concept, that everybody's tripping at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's, although I'm sure that happens at some of the outdoor music festivals you've been to, Maxim, I'm just not sure that's necessarily.
You don't know this, Dave. That's just a wild guess.
let's take a break. We'll come back. Maxim Furyk, our guest this evening, and we'll continue talking about the Smurl haunting, which is the main point of the new movie, The Conjuring: Last Rites.
Now, during the Halloween season, the veil between the worlds gets thinner and the chills get real. Oh, so very real. Something is waiting in the dark, and it's calling your name.
So answer the call this Halloween season for the Paranormal 60 Presents Halloween Haunts and Hijinks, October 9th through the 12th, for a supernatural weekend you'll never forget. It's being held at the historic haunted Palmer House Hotel in Stock Center, Minnesota. Join Dave Schrader from the Holzer Files, Ghosts of Devil's Perch, and the host of the Paranormal 60 podcast. He's teaming up with Dalen Spratt from Ghost Brothers and Phantom Forensics. And we have heart-centered intuitive Diet Renee for a weekend packed with spine-tingling experiences. You'll have two nights of live investigations and paranormal experiments, interactive workshops, gallery readings, and meet and greets, live presentations with experts themselves. This isn't just an event. It's a doorway to the unknown. So you have to ask yourself, do you dare cross it? Now, tickets are limited, so please book your Halloween Haunts and Hijinks adventure now at darknessevents.com. Again, that is darknessevents.com.
The Smurl Haunting, When Ed and Lorraine Came to Town. That's the name of the new book by Maxim Furyk. It's out and available. There's a link for it on today's program guide. All right, Maxim, walk me through the beginnings of the Smurl haunting. Was this a new home for them? Was it something they'd lived in for a while and things began to amp up? How do we begin this journey?
Well, in northeastern Pennsylvania, you know, everything starts with the Agnes flood of 1972. And this was a storm that came and just saturated northeastern Pennsylvania for days, went out to sea, and then it circled back and did it again. So, I mean, it was just horrible. The whole area got flooded out. So it was the Agnes flood that caused Jack and Janet Schmerl to relocate to West Pittston, which is a very nice town, tree-lined streets, and it's just like a wonderful place with family values and everything else. They bought a double home, I think a duplex. They shared it with Jack and Jack's parents, and it was Jack and Janet and their three daughters. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's three daughters. So anyway, they moved in there. And then little by little, your typical, and you've heard this before, but the typical signs of a haunted house or demonic infestation started to happen. There would be grunting sounds like a pig. There would be horrible smells. They would have profanities etched in the mirrors. There would be rooms that were icy cold. I mean, you know, things that shouldn't have happened. And granted that northeastern Pennsylvania sits on top of abandoned coal mines. So there's always stories of subsidences and sinkholes and all that. And some of the people thought that maybe that was happening, but it got worse and worse and worse. And finally, the Schmerls, who were devout Catholics, they asked the local priest to come in and do a blessing. They asked the priest to go and stay and spend the night. They got permission to have the local diocese send a priest there to do an exorcism. And with the Catholic faith, every church diocese has a priest who is skilled in the rite of exorcism, mm-hmm. some better than others. So they would do this. Nothing happened. Finally, Janet Schmerl had seen something about the Ed and Lorraine Warren on TV, so she contacted the Warrens. They came there to the Schmerl haunting in West Pittston, Pennsylvania, and I think they spent four nights there. But they tried to do something. Ed Warren said that there's something here. Call it a ghost, a demon, you know, whatever you want. There's some presence there. And they couldn't do the exorcism, so they brought in a Father McKenna. And McKenna was known as a rogue priest because when Pope John the 23rd initiated Vatican II, and this is when the church tried to modernize. Vatican II was our attempt at the Kumbaya, where the church, the Catholic Church, was going to be friends with everybody. You know, the Jews, the Muslims, communists, the Marxists, women, the working class, the whole thing. And he had Vatican II, which allowed churches to say their mass in languages other than Latin. Well, some people thought that Pope John the 23rd was a hero, and others thought that he was a villain. And Father McKenna was one of those. So he refused to abide by Vatican II. He started his own Catholic church. And so Father McKenna was known as a rogue priest. So he was friends with Ed and Lorraine. He came in, did three exorcisms, none of which were able to work. And so he left with his head down and was very demoralized that he wasn't able to do anything to go and cleanse the Schmerl house in West Pittston. So that was his story. But again, Ed and Lorraine Warren were friends with Father McKenna. And that was the end of his participation there. But again, Father McKenna, a rogue priest.
Now, you've got a family that's having all this issues. They start reaching out to their church. The church looks into it and tries to bring some help. I mean, what was going on that was so intense that even the church realized this place needs help?
Yeah, well, first of all, the church is working a tightrope. For example, they do not want to get caught up in the 98% of the people that are just crazy zealots. They may be mentally ill. They may be needy. They may be whatever. They're not possessed by demons. And those are the people that might embarrass the church, give them egg on their face. So they wanted to make sure that what they were getting involved in was something that was legitimate. So they took their time. But the bishop, the Scranton bishop, realized there was something going on here. And probably prompted by all the media attention. I mean, it was a point where they had to do something. they were expected to do something. And so they called for the bishop said that he was going to go and bring in a skilled exorcist. And he brought in Father Alphonse Trebolt from New York State, who came in, and he was the Lone Ranger. I mean, he was the guy that made it happen. So as far as I'm concerned, Father Alphonse Trebolt is the hero of our story.
So after McKenna couldn't do anything, they bring in Trebolt to try to help. I know that you said that there was some aggressive activity taking place around the father and mother, right?
Of a sexual nature, yeah.
Right. Was that spilling over at all towards the children?
No. The one thing that was pretty dramatic was their dog, Simon. The dog, Dawn, the daughter, saw Simon being levitated and flung against the wall.
Oof.
And the theories now that are out there are that either this was demonic forces doing that, or Dawn was a good example of Stephen King's psychokinetic powers. Stephen King made $1 million talking about Carrie, Firestarter, right. All these young people that have supernatural powers.
Right.
And some people believe that Dawn Schmerl was one of those. And it was actually her that lifted up the dog, Simon, and flung Simon across there. Again, it's a theory. We don't know. And nobody's blaming Dawn. But
right. There's this theory in a lot of these type of hauntings that there is a battery. There's the poltergeist agent they refer to. And it's usually surrounding a teenage girl that may be going through the blossoming stage, and that they are throwing off this PK energy, psychokinetic energy. Yeah. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll hear a little bit more about this case and how it was able to be wrapped up. We'll do that next right here. All right, we're back. And Maxim Furyk, our guest this evening. We're talking about the Smurl haunting, and a very powerful haunting it was, so much so that many attempts at exorcising the location came through. Could it have been poltergeist activity surrounding one child in what could have been a very delicate part of their life? Energy that PK energy, we talked about psychokinetic energy that surrounds that. We see a lot of that in the dysfunctionality of families too. It seems like some of the more bizarre and really kind of aggressive hauntings, Maxim, take place around families that are kind of in that dysfunctionality. What do we know about the Smurls? I mean, were they a pretty close, tight-knit family? Was everything good amongst them that we're aware of?
Yeah, they were. They were a tight family. They were churchgoers. He was a hard worker, provided for his family. They had the support of his parents that lived on the other side. And West Pittston was a community neighborhood. So the Smurls not only had their family structure, but they also had their church. And so I think they had a good support system. They seemed to be mentally stable. And I would say this to the naysayers. I mean, why would somebody put their family in such jeopardy, in such a horrible limelight, making something like this up? You know, why would they go and disgrace their church by making up something like this, a hoax? I believe it happened. I believe it was true. But the problem with the Schmurls was that they were dealing with this demonic harassment. I don't think they were possessed, but I think they were harassed and they were infested. But they were dealing with these demonic energies and then dealing with a media. At one time, Janet said she had something like over 50 requests for interviews. They would just keep on calling them up, asking for interviews internationally. And so you had that. And then you had the people that just didn't believe it. And then you had the crazies, these kids going up and down the street, throwing bottles and everything into their house. And just, I mean, it was horrible. And it's my understanding that the Conjuring Last Rites shows some of this frenzy. And this is the worst possible human behavior. You know, when there's nothing holding us together, when we just go berserk, when it's almost like anarchy. It's not the way it's supposed to be. I mean, why would a civilized society go and turn against these people that at their time of need, when they really needed a good neighbor. And that's when so many people turned against them. So this was a horrible story on many different levels.
At any point were their lives, did they feel threatened as though this thing was trying to kill them?
Yeah, I think they did. And the thing of it is, it didn't just manifest there in West Pittston, but like I said earlier, demonic energies, we believe, can inhibit people, places, and things. The Schmerl family went on a camping trip, and they had these paranormal things happening to them on the trip. So they had left West Pittston, and it happened. So I believe that they were being worn down, they were being terrorized. One theory is, I mean, how does a person come to be possessed or cursed by demonic spirits? And it could be that, one, that somebody put a curse on them. Two, it could be that some of those women, I don't think it happened, but maybe they were playing around with Ouija boards, tarot cards, fortune tellers, those alleged gateways into the paranormal crawl spaces. Or maybe because they were devout Catholics that they had a target on their back. And it's my understanding that the devil takes delight in bringing down a person, a man of the cloth, a man of faith or woman of faith, somebody who has dedicated their life to, you know, the Lord and the gospel. So I think that possibly because the Schmerls were such devout Catholics that they were marked. And I think that's one reason why the demonic spirits were coming after them. And according to Lorraine, there were four of them. There were four. There was one that was sort of the ringleader, and then there were other demons that this ringleader was puppeting,
kind of in control of.
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting you say they leave the house, they go out camping, and this paranormal activity continues to follow them. So that makes you believe, well, then maybe it is centered around the daughter. Maybe there is something to that. However, while they were out of town, neighbors would hear screams and yells and bangs and lights going on and outside the house, right? And they would call the police because of this. Police came to investigate and check it out. They were witness to what was going on there. So this was something that seemed to be growing in strength mm-hmm. and animosity and new boundaries. It didn't know any boundaries.
Yeah. It reminds me, you know, I talk a lot about J. Allen Hynek's High Strangeness. You know, you see a light there in the sky, and that's just, you know, strange. But if it hovers over your car and you can't start the car and you have lost time and all this, you have all these levels of high strangeness. I think with the Schmerl haunting, there were numerous segments of high strangeness, including the horrific, the rape, the sexual assault by this female succubus that I always thought when I first heard that, I said, how could Jack Schmerl admit this? I mean, like, this is something that's very personal, very intimate. I would think that would be tough for a guy to say that, you know, I was raped, not, you know, by a demon. So, you know, I think he put himself out there mm-hmm. and really put himself, you know, to a point where he was, you know, he was open to criticism. So it's a, I believe the Schmerl haunting did happen. I don't know what the Conjuring Last Rites is going to be all about, but I heard that it's very terrifying, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
When we come back, we're going to dip into your other book, Paranormal Apocalypse, Is This How It Ends? You hear stories like this that are taking place, the Schmerl haunting, the Lutz family, the, you know, Snedeker family from haunting in Connecticut, and so many others that have been surrounded by supernatural elements. It does make people curious. We're seeing more and more people are having encounters with strange beings. People are having encounters with strange lights. People are having encounters with hauntings, with possession. Is there something going on? Was the opening of this in the 70s with the popularity and people kind of leaning into this, did it begin something that has continued to gain momentum and is getting stronger and stronger? So we'll discuss some of that in the next hour. But we have to ask ourselves, if hauntings are only the beginning, what if the strange, the spectral, the supernatural are building towards something much larger? An ending written not in fire and brimstone, but in paranormal upheaval. In hour two, Max Empiric returns with his provocative work, Paranormal Apocalypse, This Is How It Ends. Could we already be living on borrowed time? We'll discuss that next when we return right here to your home for the paranormal. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360.